The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hi, and good evening, everybody. This is Michael, and this is our 84th Dissipation of Glamour Initiative webinar. And we're on our 24th program, I believe, in terms of our readings, as we are reading straight through the book, and it'll take a while, of course. And just the way we're doing that with the reappearance of the Christ on Thursday nights as much as possible. And on Saturday nights, we're going to be doing that, the destiny of the nations. So we are just about at this point where we're dealing with the rules of the road. So we'll have an introduction to that. But meanwhile, let's just have a little bit of an alignment here. Excuse me. And we are gathered together to form a subjective group that can work in the way that Master DK suggested. So hopefully we can do some good in these troubled psychological times. You know, it's such a problem with not only Kama, but Kama Manas, that sort of mixture of mind and emotions where it's very difficult to keep one or the other quite clear. So we hope to make our contribution and clarify different aspects of distortion upon the astral plane, but of course it is mixed with mind at this point in our development. I just want to say welcome you, say hi, Alexandra and Marie, Annette, Antoinette, Ariel, Bianca, Carl, Deborah, Frederick, Gregory, Jan, Jean-Pierre, Joan, and Joanne. And John should be here, but he looks like he's offline, not sure what's going on there. Karen, Laura, Margot, Marissa, Martha, Natnia, Olivia, Risto, Susan, Veronique, Winnie, and Yvonne and Zenaide. And here on the technical side of things is Michael and Biel, in case something happens along the way. Also, let me just announce it now that, you know, we have our sort of one YouTube link that you may be familiar with. And I don't know, Biel, if you can possibly find that and put that in the chat box, but we have our Blue Rose Sisterhood. Oh, that'd be great. Thank you so much. We have our Blue Rose Sisterhood continuing with a broadcast at 7 o'clock GMT. And we're looking at sort of the, you know, it's deity yoga, you know, the same kind of thing that the Dalai Lama practices, only maybe it's the Hindu version of it. And we're looking at the name for the month, which has to do with one's health. And also the Shambhala names of Mary. Mary really is the symbol for the entire purified earth, and especially in its material aspect. So if you want to join us there, or you think you may wish to be a member of the Blue Rose Sisterhood, whether you're a man or woman, you know, you can be a Shiva brother or a Blue Rose sister, whatever, just use that link, which will be in the chat box. So, okay, good. Now we're moving towards the rules of the road. I told you the story when I first started teaching in Denmark a long time ago. The man who very kindly was hosting us said, well, why are you bothering with these simple things? Let's get into the real thing. But before you knew it, the group had disobeyed just about every rule there. So it is a tremendous foundation, and we need to understand its application to our life. The road and the path, you know, they're pretty much the same thing. And we are that path. We are that road. Now, how is that possible that we are the road? The way it is possible is through the theory of emanation. Well, it's not a theory, it's a fact. I mean, not only the Gnostics, but the Buddhists were deeply into emanation. And basically what it means is that the entity that is the source of all extends itself through all sorts of lesser instantiations or lesser forms of appearance. And so that one entity, which is what we are the universal logos, we are the being itself, is all the way through and through, right down here into the human stage. I call it the monad in extension, but it's really much more than that. It's not just the monad in extension, it's the one and only universal monad in extension. And all we have to do is unveil the inhibitions to our deeper perception, and we are treading the path we are back to the source of original universal perception. I hope I'm being clear on that. There is a universal perception which we as extensions of that being have lost, and as we unveil ourselves, we're treading our way back to that great self-perception, you might say. And of course, the path is the presence of what we are through every level that we have descended on. That presence is the path. And as we unveil ourselves, the presence becomes more and more inclusive of all kinds of perceptions until the one great perception remains. Now, you know, this is in a way, this is Vedanta, this is holism, this is the oneness perception, and we don't want to be glib about it and just imagine where we have that, you know. It's laborious to retrace our path back to the realization of the only one thing, as it says in the Divine Timander. There is only one thing and we are it, but we are in fragments, and that's called the great illusion. Anyway, we are that path. So now we're talking about the road and the path, and we're tracing our way back to higher states of consciousness. As he learns to travel with them, that's, you know, his brothers and sisters on the road, they're governing, and maybe the hierarchy as well, the elder brothers, their governing incentives and techniques of their chosen service will penetrate his consciousness. We might say, that's not it. That's the trouble when you select something and then you have a new copy and then it doesn't work. All right, we'll penetrate his consciousness. So we're talking here about with the divine plan, and automatically and naturally he will begin to obey the higher rhythm and to give his assent. You see, because basically the divine plan is not just a configuration the way we might say the divine purpose is. It's an archetype of relationship, but the divine plan has all these factors of cycle and of timing. And it's only upon the plane where the higher aspects of hierarchy formulate that divine plan that we can actually get a sense of those cycles. Now, there is a great location on the divine, on the level of Atma, and there it is here. And on this Atmic plane, and on the third sub level of the Atmic plane, we have a particular power which is called all knowledge. Now, let me see if I can go back to this and find a chart which Keith Bailey put together. There it is. And as you see, on the third level of the Atmic plane, which is as high as we can possibly grasp, because the other two levels are beyond the capacity of a master to grasp, we have something called all knowledge. And that is very much about the knowledge of cycles and of rhythms. So there's so much to do with timing when you want to cooperate with the divine plan, okay? So, and automatically he will begin to obey the higher rhythm, and let's put it like this too, also, and give his assent. And I'll say, also, the soul has its own rhythms. And DK says, well, we will learn to recognize these rhythms of the meditating soul as our higher inspirations, and we should be sensitive to them and give the soul plenty of opportunity to reach us through its rhythmic meditation. So as we progress, the higher rhythms, the sense of timing of when we should do something, begin to dawn on us. It's not just what we do, it's when we do it. So automatically he will begin to obey the higher rhythm and give his assent, his agreement, to the laws which control group life and group consciousness. That's the next step. So I this morning, in dealing with the, my morning anyway, when dealing with the signs of triangles, I gave an example. I said, okay, there's the triangle between three great constellations, Cancer, Leo, and Aquarius. So what's that all about? And I said, Cancer is a group, is mass consciousness, Leo is individual consciousness, and Aquarius, which is a sign constellation which has so much to do with cycles, is about group consciousness. So there's a progression in that particular triangle into group life. And all of us are meant to become Aquarians, regardless of what our present astrological type may be. Like Master Moria said, I don't care what your horoscope says in terms of the four elements, there are fiery types of people underneath it all, and there are those who are not. So you can have any of the kinds of signs that the zodiac arrays, and you can still be what he calls a fiery type. Okay, group life and group consciousness. Finally, he will find himself entering into the silent places where the masters of the wisdom dwell. Now, where do they dwell? Well, you know, they dwell within the cosmic ethers, the realm of the spiritual triad, and especially on the Buddhic and the Atmic planes, which is a very close reflection of what the monad is. And they will work, okay, and will work in group rhythm with them. Now, when we are conditioned by Mars, when our astral body is just filled with impulses that we obey without even thinking about them, we cannot be in group rhythm. It takes some kind of Uranian, some kind of Saturnian restraining impulse to say, hey, what's really going on here? What is the timing? So Mars and the sixth ray, they are subject to what is called the glamour of interference, which means you time things poorly. And basically DK said the whole preceding age was a question of poor timing and disregard for manifestation upon the physical plane, and that is fast fading. So we have, you know, and we try to do this too, you know, along come the full moons or the new moons, and we try to work in rhythm with these specially selected moments of value, and we discipline ourselves. Now, that may take quite a bit of outer disciplining of the life, because, you know, you can't just do what you want when you want to. I mean, you have a schedule to uphold, and the schedule gets more and more demanding. As I may have said earlier, DK said, the more you achieve inner freedom, the more your life will be outwardly bound. Now think about that for a minute. Your inner freedom corresponds to or accompanies a kind of outward bondage to duty and to service on the outer plane. Think about that, because obviously we're entering into a great Saturnian rigor when we decide we're going to tread this path. So we're going to work in group rhythm with the masters. We're going to obey our meditation schedule. We're going to obey our monthly schedule. And, you know, if you have a certain kind of rhythmic service, you have to obey that. Anyway, we obey thus the laws of the spiritual realm, which are subject to the laws of God. And these laws have a rhythmic factor, as do the ray cycles and astrological cycles. So we have to get used to the whole idea of rhythm, and it's going to help us overcome the confusion and impulsiveness which arises when we just do things according to Martian promptings of the astral body. Okay, now, you know, sort of take notes as we go along, anything that you want to discuss particularly. And like I say, DK's presentation is one big book. It's a great sphere of interrelated knowledge. So anything you want to talk about is okay too, in addition to what we're talking about here. Time and again, along the road, which is the extension of being into more and more confined atmospheres of perception, okay, or the withdrawal of the consciousness along that, emanative stream, so that there's more and more perception. Anyway, it's an emanative stream of being. And I think I'll define it that way. The road is an emanative stream of pure being, which is what we really are. Now, you know, a lot of us, we want to love, we want to be the soul, we want to have spiritual intimacy, all those good relational things. But remember that Master DK is teaching a dual curriculum to us, maybe making up for lost time. In other words, we are dealing now with the curriculum of the soul, and we're dealing with the curriculum of the Antakarana, which leads into the realm of will and into the realm of being. So the burden upon us is heavier than as if we were just studying one thing, but there's a lot of lost time to make up for, and there's a lot of pressure to make sure that the forces of obstruction do not delay the goodness of the onset of the Aquarian Age. You can't stop the Aquarian Age, but you can rob it of its beauty and its potentials for the first, he said, approximately 300 years, and we don't want that. Time and again along the road, he will, and you know, test yourself on this, he will revolt from control and will fall back into the glamour of his supposed freedom. Now, I told you about that person who was a member of DK's groups, and she was a seventh-ray soul and a first-ray rebellious personality. Her soul didn't quite bring her personality to bear. She was an artist, probably had a fourth-ray mind. He didn't go too far in describing the rest. And she fell victim to the glamour of the independent soul. Now, really, there is no such thing. There's only one consciousness. So, you know, the glamour, really, it's the independent first-rate personality masquerading as the soul, because the soul is always group consciousness, conscious and considerate of what is the group goal and how the actions put forth help achieve that group goal. Okay, there is freedom from the control of the personality. There's freedom from the control of personalities, but there is never any freedom from the law of service. Now, you may remember the law of service. This is the third law of the soul. Oop, light of the soul. It's law of the soul. Sorry. All right, so in esoteric psychology, which, volume 2, which I hope all of you have read or are reading or will do so, you know, with the Moria Federation or Arcane School or whatever. The third law of the soul, the law of service, extremely, extremely important as it is. And you can probably figure out the reason why it's the third law. So there's never any freedom from the law of service and from the constant interplay between man and man and soul. So there is meant to be a harmonious interplay. And on the plane of soul, you're much more likely to get that harmonious interplay than on the plane of man or personality. To stand really free is to stand in the clear, unimpeded light of the soul, which is basically and intrinsically group consciousness. From the time we reach the higher mental plane, from the time we can focus on the higher mental plane, group consciousness takes over, giving way eventually to the consciousness of oneness. So it goes from the individual to the group to the one. And I might almost say that's a triangle where we might call it Leo, Aquarius, Pisces. And you can imagine why, right? Because, you know, Pisces is the sign of identification. And you find the only one thing that is pervading all things, whereas Aquarius is the group conscious sign and Leo is the sign of individualism. So when you're dealing with triangles, always be able to explain, if you can, why this triangle is a triangle and what its purpose may be according to the relationship of the three points in the triangle. Now, I just want to turn to page 685 in the Rays and the Initiations. And, you know, if I haven't mentioned it before, I think I have, there are 9 modes of freedom corresponding to each initiation along the path, all the way up to the 9th initiation. About those things, we can't say much. All we can do is read about them and say, well, that's interesting, and maybe I'll know someday. So, you know, freedom from the control of the physical body, from the control of the astral body, and then the third initiation being, you know, for people like ourselves, a very great climax, freedom from the ancient authority of the threefold personality, marking a climaxing moment in the history of all initiates. And then, you know, onward and onward, freedom, 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 9 types of freedom. Be sure you read that, 685, 686, and try to take it in, because we've been dealing right here with the kinds of freedom that you can have. You can have freedom from the control of the personality, and that is basically the third initiation. And freedom from the control of other personalities, well, as you become stronger and stronger in the spiritual work, you can ward off the pressure of those who try to compel you to act as if you were simply a personality. All right, going on a little. Therefore, when one of you, he's talking to his group now, you know, maybe that group of 9 people who were daring enough to be members of this particular group, and of course, he selected them for interior reasons, you know, and they each played a different role, and probably there were 3 at the heart of every 9 who were the core of that group of 9. Anyway, therefore, when one of you is beset by uncertainty and unrest, desiring and demanding to walk free, and that no authority be imposed upon you. I think this lady, by the way, thinks she had a very strong Leo as well, and in the beginning, you know, no authority is going to be imposed on me when I'm a Leo. I rule, right? See that you are not submitting to the glamour of a desire to be freed from your group impacts, and make sure you are not seeking, as a sensitive soul, a way of escape. So, in other words, when you have a very insistent kind of prompting within you, always test the motive of it. may be good, may be bad, but if it works against the coherence of the group and you stand in some kind of, you know, a proud position, what is the real motive? Now, we have this in politics at the moment. Not all of the leaders in the world, and especially in the United States, consider the group. They consider themselves. So what is the real motive behind this? We have to trace that motive and begin by tracing it in yourself. When you have a very insistent prompting that you have to do something in a certain way, and if when you think more deeply, it may not be especially good for the group. I am using this phrase in the modern psychological sense, the way of escape, you know. Well, I think in the age of Pisces, we've had a lot of escape. But if you'll notice, Aquarius does rule the dense physical plane in the table of creative hierarchies. And so even though, let's see if I can find it here. Blah, blah, blah. Is that it? No, that's 2 years. Maybe this is it. I'll try to show you what I mean. 2, 3. Okay. Some creative hierarchies have to show up here. So eventually. There we go. All right. So I'm going to make it bigger. There we go. Notice that on the very lowest of the planes, and probably it's quite etheric, and having to do with our elemental physical lives, the sign Aquarius is there, and the moon is there, probably veiling the planet Uranus. So in the Aquarian age, it's going to be an age of spiritual manifestation, not ignoring the dense physical plane the way Pisces and the sixth ray tended to do. DK points this out, and why there's so much confusion during the age of Pisces, because of the running away, the psychological escape from the physical plane. Of course, it was hard in those days, and it's been very hard. And lately, the fifth ray developments have offered us many new possibilities. So we can have a life eventually, which has in it, DK tells us, the leisure to cultivate our spirituality. In other words, the fifth ray, with its mastery of the elemental forces and basic foundational energies of nature, will give us the time we need in order to cultivate ourselves. In the old days, and for a long time, it has not been so for average people. Maybe the aristocracy had it. So he's using this idea of escape in the modern psychological sense. Be sure to ask yourself the question, is your comfort and your peace of mind of such definite importance to yourself and to others that it warrants your sacrificing the group integrity in order to have it? Oh, wow, that is, I mean, you know, I suppose we could all ask ourselves that particular question. And some of us, you know, have had occasion where we're deeply involved in the group process, right? So as a soul, we already are deeply involved in the group process, but as a personality, we may not be impressed with the fact that it is so. So I'll repeat that. Is your comfort and your peace of mind, you know, because peace, as the absence of conflict, is not real peace at all. It's not a dynamic peace at all. It's just a rescue from the integration process is really what it is. Because when the integration process really begins to be activated, there are going to be frictions and disruptions as higher energies come in contact with lower energies. If your comfort and your peace of mind of such definite importance to yourself and to others that it warrants your sacrificing the group integrity in order to have it. Now, how much do we care about the group integrity? And when we think of who we are, can we meaningfully say, I am the group, in a way that tells us that this is a higher type of identity than I am my own personality. See, that's an advance into group consciousness, and eventually comes the advance into oneness. Now, if you really want to see some interesting stuff, you go to, okay, to here. That's the great invocation. That's interesting. Okay, and esoteric astrology, and you go to page 332, and you look at Gemini, I think, or maybe even Aquarius. Look here. The mantrums, Gemini. I serve myself. That's the beginning of it all, and that's the undeveloped man. Then comes the more advanced man, maybe not the initiate yet, of any kind, not even a probationary initiate, but on the way, I serve my brother. It says orientation of it. Doesn't mean you're totally successful. And finally, look, I serve the one. So here is individual consciousness. Here is the beginning of group consciousness. And here is oneness consciousness. And this is repeated in various places. The lower self in Leo, the higher self in Leo, more of the soul, and the one self, finally connected with Uranus in Leo. And maybe, I don't know, down here in Aquarius, the burden of the self, the burden of humanity, which is a soul factor, and the burden of the world, that's the oneness factor. And you're helping Atlas there hold up the world and making sure that, as the hierarchy does, that he can hold it on his shoulders. Okay, anyway, go to, you know, esoteric astrology 332, 333, and it's some marvelous thought about the different timing in the life of man and the kind of mantrums and experience that he's passing through. The different mantrums embody the experience. All right, going on. Excuse me. Does your own interior satisfaction provide an adequate excuse for delaying the planned group purpose? Well, you know, obviously he knows and we know what the answers are, but do we actually ask ourselves these things? And further, do we ever catch ourselves doing these things? That's the question. Or do we? Are we just oblivious to what we're doing? And we say, well, I'm just fine. I'm not hurting anybody. For delay it, that is the group purpose, it certainly will if you, you know, just care about yourself. Whatever you decide will constitute in its term an authoritative decision with all the consequent reactions upon the group. And of course, what we end up knowing is the master will be watching and will decide upon how you can be used in service. So we have some very fateful decisions going on there. All right, going on. What is this occult obedience, my brothers, about which we hear so much? Now, occult obedience is undertaken in also in the book Treatise on White Magic and the Rays and the Initiations and so forth. There are those four factors which I've made us all familiar, with which I've made us familiar, and you know what they are, but I'm going to turn there anyway if I can find them. And basically they're listed in a sequence of four, and you'll see that occult obedience is necessary. So inquire the way. All right, so there we have, there it is, okay. So this is where you can look for further amplification on this subject. Inquire the way, obey the inner impulses of the soul. That's the occult obedience part. Pay no attention to any worldly consideration. That's a tough, what they call a hard saying, and live a life which is an example to others. So you turn to page 583, and basically you have the guidance. If you obey those things, you become a master. It's as simple as that. And so they must be a little bit hard to obey. All right, so what is this occult obedience, my brothers, about which we hear so much? Not what many occult groups make it out to be. It is not the control of an external organization dedicated to occult work, like you've got to obey all the rules of the organization, you know. It is not the imposed conditions of any teacher of any rank, and DK, as you know, does not impose. He makes suggestions, and according to your response, so will your usefulness be assessed. It is not the imposed conditions of any teacher of any rank. Maybe Master Moria tends to be a little more directive, you know. But anyway, DK, a second-ray master, looks at it this way. It is not the exchange of the prison of one set of ideas for those of another set with perhaps a larger range or import, because after all, a prison is a prison, okay. Whether it is a tiny cell or an isolated island of vast extent. Now, it's the factor of isolation which makes the prison, right? So let's just see here that it is isolation which makes the prison, and unity and oneness which bring release. So even if you're on a big island, it's still an island. Okay. The authority to which we, the teachers on the inner side, respond is twofold in nature. And look, they respond all the time to authority because DK is always telling us it is not permitted to say this at this time, you know. I now have permission to say this, et cetera, et cetera. The authority to which we, the teachers on the inner side, respond is twofold in nature. And to it, you are just beginning as units in a group to respond to what do you respond? Okay. So let's see the twofoldness. To what do you respond when you are beginning to be occultly obedient? Okay. Now, to the slowly emerging realization of the light beyond. There's always a greater light. The universe itself is light, and the absoluteness is the great darkness. So there's always going to be, for a long time, a light beyond, using that phrase as a symbol. This light is different in its appeal to the individual, yet it is one light, I suppose, you know. Our rays, our astrology, our experience provide certain filters in how we apprehend the light. And a greater portion of it can be apprehended by those who are more developed and so forth. Yet it is one light, one universe. Let's just stick to the universe. But its recognition reveals new laws, new responsibilities, new duties and obligations, and new relations to others. So what we say, there are new revelations with each intensification of access to the light. Okay. Now, you know, let's just say, let's try to obey the laws of the soul, number one, right? Laws of nature, we can't help it. We will obey them or pay the price. We also pay a price if we don't obey the laws of the soul, the law of sacrifice, the law of magnetic impulse, the law of service, the law of repulse, the law of group progress. Maybe we can obey those. But for each one, an intensification of the light is needed before you can really move on to the next one. What about systemic laws? Well, they're just too big, but we need an increased access to more light to understand them. What about cosmic laws? To really understand a cosmic law, still more light is required. So always light reveals the new. It can also reveal, you know, what is hidden in the dark depths of our nature, but let's just say that light is used to reveal the new and the laws of the new condition. So these constitute an authoritative control. When we run into a law, no one can disobey a law, My old teacher used to say, no one breaks the law breaks them. I used to take it into consideration and more lately. None can escape this authority of law, but can disobey it in time and space and for a temporary period until the crushing result turns out to be the case. So we're talking about authority here. So we respond to the authority, let me put it this way. Sorry, if I try to go too fast, I'm in trouble. Okay. We respond to the authority of the intent of the intensifying light and the laws which it reveals. Now, what else? Now we respond also, and this is our introduction to what we're going to take up next time. We respond to the authority of the rules of the road, you know, which is the rules of how basically at first we conduct ourselves as a soul within the environment into which we have been projected. We respond to the authority of the rules of the road which are imposed upon one as one passes from the path of probation onto the path of discipleship. Basically, the real path of discipleship is beginning at the first initiation, the real path. And some will say even after the first initiation, when you're an accepted disciple, and then, and only then, the real path of discipleship and not probationary discipleship begins. Yet it is one road, leading all the way from the evolution of the unicellular organism up into, you know, universal consciousness. Yet it is one road. Upon this narrow, razor-edged path, at least thus it is for conscious beings such as ourselves, it begins to be that one learns to walk with discipline and discretion, you know, caution about the environment and wise choice, with the desirelessness, the dispassion, which one experiences in unison with one's fellow disciples. Now, that is really an important statement. So let's look at it one more time. What I have learned, maybe you've learned it too, is if I say something three times to myself, it really sinks in. So if I have a mantra or a realization or something that really is true to me, I do say it three times. And Master Mori says, press your nose at the same time. Oh, these are little occult hints, and they sound a little odd, but we do have to make an impact upon ourselves. So it is one road, probation, discipleship, initiation, whatever. Upon this narrow, razor-edged path, you do not dare deviate, you know. One learns to walk with discipline and discretion, you know, what you can say and do within a certain context, and with the desirelessness, i.e. dispassion, which one experiences in unison with one's fellow disciples, and let's just say, if they are trained. And that's why you don't want to cause trouble to your fellow disciples. You want to be a trained disciple and inherit the earth. Okay. Now, what briefly and succinctly are these rules of the road? Let me give you six of the simplest rules. And this implies that there must be others begging you. It's an interesting word. It means he's very earnest that you should follow his advice, begging you to remember that they are not authoritatively imposed by an arbitrary board of directors, such as a group teacher or teachers, of whom I might, of course, be one, but are the outcome of the conditions to be found upon the path itself. In other words, those who have tread the path, those who have trodden it, they've learned following these rules works. A rule is not a law. A rule is a lesser thing than a law, but a rule is a proven method of success, And he talks about that in Rays and Initiations when he talks about, okay, we have laws here, we have rules here we're studying. What's the difference? They carry the warrant of a man's own soul and are the result of the experience of millions of travelers upon that path. Okay. are we laggards, or did we start out later or whatever? Anyway, millions have gone before and they have come to the conclusion that these rules provide success in the elevation of consciousness and capacity. I will give you these six rules, even as I gave them to another aspirant. I think that aspirant was HSD, whose rays were six, seven? Oh, goodness. Well, anyway, she was a six-ray soul. I remember that. And I think ray one, and ray six, and ray seven. Not exactly sure, but anyway, she was one of those who was transferring from the six-ray soul to the second-ray soul, and she was having a tough time. She was a Libra person, and was her personality the seventh ray? I know her mind was the first ray, a fluid map-making mind, he said, of her. And she had very, well, full of criticism, actually. Anyway, so she needed to know how to tread the path properly because she was causing a lot of distress to her fellow disciples, maybe with gossip and criticism and all that kind of thing. So I give you these in ancient and symbolic form, translating them as well as I can from the ancient records stored in the Hall of Wisdom and available to all earnest disciples, such as you. And eventually, you know, we all will have the library card, and hopefully it'll last forever, at least for the duration of this universe. So, you know, obviously, I've made my way to the point where the rules of the road are now going to be discussed. I made a big mistake. I was doing a short program in white magic, and I forgot that I was in glamour, so I told the white magic people the rules of the road were coming up, and then I had to untell them, okay? The rules of the road were not coming up, but I hope that I made amends somehow. All right, so here we are, and this is the end of what we're going to study now, and then in 1 week, we will study more, and this is number 84, and I forget, we started at page 48. Where are we now?
Okay. 50. You're on page 50.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you. I love the voice of God. Thank you so much. All right. So this is going to be next time, page 50 to whatever. And this is 48 to 50. And next one will be 85. And I think, not sure whether Tuya and I will be traveling on the next occasion. So we'll have to let you know on that. Let me just see when that is. That's the 7th, right? Friday the 7th. Oh, I have a bad feeling that maybe we will be traveling, but we will let you know. And when this will resume, it might have to resume in 2 weeks because we take an overnight train, do all that kind of thing. So it's very hard to get a broadcast going from a moving train. But of course, I can try it. Right. The 7th of September. Okay, does everything look right there? 84, number 24, 85, number, and this will be reading number 25, and this has been reading number 24. Okay, I'm hoping that this is more or less correct.
Fix the page. There right, friend. You go. There you go. You got it.
Did I get it? Okay, I'll tell you. One day I'm going to learn the 7th ray. And the 5th ray would help too. And everything will then be correct. And we will do the 6 rules on the path the next time. And they're very important. And don't be like my classmates were a long time ago in Denmark and say, we don't need these, we know all that. And you know, then came the proof of what was known or not known. But it was a great class, nevertheless, however advanced one may think one is, these rules stand as necessary. Okay, friends, so a lot more of you have joined us since I welcomed you, and I can't find your names exactly, but I do welcome you here, and thanks for joining. And have you been able to take care of that there's a hand raised by somebody there.
Yes, and you also have a question in the question box.
Okay, fantastic. All right, thanks. Thanks, Bill. Now, all I got to do is, where do I go? Question in the question box. Okay, it should come out
You didn't unmute Risto for his question.
Oh, okay, but Risto speaks Finnish. Oh. Let's just see if it's possible what we can do. Did Risto have a question or did he ask you a question?
No, his hand was up.
Okay. Okay, well, let's just see, because Tuya cannot be here right now. She has grave cell phone problems, and that's how she's receiving and cooperating. So let's see with Risto. Hi, Risto. Did you have a question that you wanted to ask? I know that you speak mostly Finnish. So if you do, maybe you write it down or something. But anyway. Okay, glad you're here. Glad you're here. And sometimes people just press the hand, you know, and it just happens. So we're here and we can answer if there's some technical issue. And unfortunately, Tuya is not here, but Ario is here. And so if you have a question that you want to ask in Finnish, Ario can translate that if you would like to do that. And then Ario will be hearing you and can let me know what it is. So just let me know if that is what you would like to do. But maybe it's just one of those. Anyway, let us know. Glad you're here. Okay. Now, there's a question here from Deborah.
Right.
Okay, Michael, what is to be our meditative service at the time of the new moon? Well, you know, I think it's two things, Deborah. When I was with the Arcane School, we had a lot of new Group of World Servers events with the new moon. So we looked at it as a possible practical way of seeing the plan enacted more towards action and will than towards consciousness, for which we use the full moon. But I want to say that the new moon can be a very will-centered type of moment. And it can, in a way, it's a very powerful eclipse when new moon eclipses occur. And there is the sense that Shambhala and the will can be involved. So I look at it in two ways, as practical demonstration, but on the physical plane of the serving groups and so forth. We invited in the Arcane School all the many serving groups who were trying to make the plan practical at that time. But also going further with it, we realize that it is a tremendous will impress. And so the opportunity to reach into the will, strengthen one's will in contradistinction to one's consciousness. Now look, consciousness and will go hand in hand. And the more consciousness you have, the better and stronger your will is likely to be, and the other way around too. But will can be distinguished from consciousness, and I look at it as a time of will strengthening, because it's a kind of double whammy. The sun is really making its impress upon the lunar vehicles. So that's how I understand it at this time. Two factors, manifestation and will. Okay. Other thoughts, questions, statements, whatever, you know, anything goes, because I say it's one big book that Master DK wrote. And I include the secret doctrine and all those things that came out of early theosophy. You know, it's just scratching the surface of the ageless wisdom, but it's all one thing. And from any point, you can reach any other point in this sphere of knowledge and wisdom. So whatever you want to discuss, it can be in relation to what we have discussed tonight, which is always nice occasionally, you know, when that happens. or it can be simply questions that you may have, you know, and you know, the authority of the master, and whether you're group conscious or not, and how do you know when you're helping the group, and how do you know when you are somehow inhibiting the group? Are you in a process of rebellion? I mean, I have been, I know, at various times. Or are you acquiescing, as the Christ did in the Garden of Gethsemane, and doing your own version of "Not my will, but thine be done"? Okay, so it looks like we have another question in hand. Okay, the law of service is very much related to the law of sacrifice, says Veronique Wamans, and that's very correct, Veronique, because, you know, DK says an interesting thing. He says, few people really realize how hard it is to serve, how much sacrifice, he used the word sacrifice, how much sacrifice of time and interest it takes to be a true server. I can verify that, and I know that many of us can verify that, that when we truly are obliged to serve and do serve, we give up many things which, as a soul, we might, in a way, spiritually prefer to do. So I did mention this before, that DK somehow said, and it impressed me in the early days, he says, look, if you're busy expressing your soul, which is a very legitimate spiritual thing to do, you cannot be used for the preparation for the reappearance of the Christ. And I thought, that's a hard saying, you know. But there are some people who are really into expressing their soul nature. It's very good. But the other path is still more, the other path of service is still more sacrificial. Now, Veronique, did you want to say something? If you want to, say something, you can also. Turn down your. You need headphones. you need headphones. Otherwise, we're gonna get. Go ahead. If you like, or everything's fine. I assume everything's fine. Okay, maybe I came close to answering your question, but look, for everybody, get headphones that work. Because what it does do is it allows a dialogue to take place, because otherwise your own words or my words or someone else's words will re-echo in your machine. And that's why, even though lately I've been doing a lot of these white magic programs without using any headphones at all, because it's just me and the machine, if I am in a group process, the headphones prevent the echo effect. So think about that, it might work. Okay, and do I want to explain more about the two and the relation? Well, that may be all that I can really say, because let's just say that the law of sacrifice is primary. It means you give up the lesser for the greater, and always with some degree of painful detachment from the lesser, which you think is the greater. Now, I don't know, have you read in Esoteric Psychology 2, those two wonderful chapters on the law of sacrifice and law of service? Yes, so that's very good. So, you know, we would need like specific things in relation to that. But let's just say that service is demanded from a focus within your energy system, which cannot be reached unless you sacrifice lesser preoccupations. If you're always busy with lesser things, you know, he talked about that to one of the disciples. They sort of the glamour of circumstance. The guy was always connected with little petty things that had to be done. They had to be done, but he was overly involved in them and he couldn't get into the higher position. So we sacrifice and detach from the lesser involvements to achieve an altitude. To achieve an altitude within our energy system, which allows us to know how the soul really wants us to serve and what is the perspective of the soul in our service, rather than just running around and saying, okay, I'm busy, I'm active, I'm helping, I'm serving. Because he warns us that service can degenerate into busyness and into the attempt to correct other people and have them serve as one wants them to serve, one can become a sort of a serving busybody. You know, he gives various pitfalls. So the key is we have to achieve an altitude of soul impression and soul consciousness if we want truly to serve, and that requires sacrifice. And I think that's the main connection between them. Yeah, that's right. Letting go of the lesser. Okay. Addressing letters to one of the attendants, SBL, how they were received, and she explained it, but I can't remember very well. You know, Alice Bailey did. DK chose these people to be parts of his group. Alice Bailey was the stenographer, the mental telepath. Alice Bailey took down what DK had to say for each of those people, and then she wrote the letters out to them, and that's how they communicated with Master DK. So that's it, basically telepathy, and he did not post, of course. She did the posting, but he studied the people, and he gave them every 6 months or every year, sometimes every 2 years, instruction that should last them for the next period of time. And he even said, look, compared to the work that Alice Bailey is doing, this work is relatively unimportant, but okay, I'm doing that for now. When the war really heated up, he had to space his communications widely, and then later there was a lapse of 2 years, and even an earlier lapse of 2 years, but Alice Bailey was the recipient, okay, of that. I don't know if that accords with what BL said, but I think it's probably pretty close. I think we're aware of that. Now, letting go of the lesser, well, you know, we think the lesser is the greater. We hang on to the body when it's not even a principle. So we hang on to that which we estimate is greater, but is really lesser. So that's why we have to detach from these lesser attachments in order to rise into the altitude of appreciation of the greater perceptions. I hope that's clear. Okay.
Michael?
Yes, Bill. Yes, go ahead.
Remember that you had a question during the full moon webinar from Sandra Bates?
Yeah. Okay, I don't think she's here, but let's deal with the question.
Okay.
Do you recall what it was?
I haven't. Okay, good. It was kind of a two-parter. Her questions were, how do we assist our friends who believe the Bible and believe that following DK's teachings is following the false gods presented to distract from the true way of the gospel? Then she goes on to say, let me just read it all because I think you can answer it together. Can we realize that the Christ within does not demean Jesus or make us into big egos prating about us being super beings? Why do faithful followers believe it is sinful to think that God is within each of us?
Well, they are faithful followers largely along a semi-emotional blind faith six-ray line. They are not yet intellectual mystics. That's how he points it out. So basically, it's not just a question of belief. We're entering the age of knowledge now and of confirmed experience. And of course, people have to be willing to switch their attention into the mind, and many true believers do not do that. But what I always do in this case is they say, look, you know, before the Council of Nicaea, there were a lot of things in Christianity, even closer to the teachings of Jesus, i.e. Christ, which were very much along the line of reincarnation and the mysteries and so forth. There were even popes who were initiated into the mysteries. There was a kind of an age of darkness which came upon the mind during some of the early medieval periods, and that affected Christianity as well. But we're told that to the masses or to the general people, Jesus was speaking in parables. But to you, he said, to you disciples, I speak of the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, which never made their way into the Bible. So what I do with people is, hey, look, are you interested in what Jesus was really saying to his disciples? And, you know, that tradition has been preserved for ages because he was an initiate into these mysteries. So if you're really interested in those things, you have to widen your mind that not all things that are truth are contained in the Bible. And they either will or they won't. But, you know, later in life, and incarnations will come, they will get so tired of being the confined spirit and the diminished mind that they will break through the blind faith into intellectual mysticism and then into intellectual loving spiritual occultism. You cannot necessarily know when that time will be. It can be tomorrow. It can be in five incarnations. So that's how I talk to my relatives who, very much like Sandy's, have problems with deviating from exactly what they think the Bible says, the so-called inerrancy of the Bible. Jerry Falwell in that group used to emphasize the, you know, word-for-word thing, but Alice Bailey said, look, I've been involved in translation. I've been involved in looking at the Aramaic. The inerrancy is impossible. Every translator really knows that. You can't do it. So when you translate into another language, you cannot say this is the absolute word of God. Language gets in the way. So I use different means of trying to direct people in the broader, deeper perception. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's all. And the time will come when it will work. So maybe we can pass that on to Sandy, you know, because I said I would try to answer it. It wasn't the time at that time to deal with it. Okay. So. And
then Anne has a comment in there on the chakras.
Okay, so let's see here. The chakras have an astral equivalent, yes, but I was told to balance the chakras in three levels, and three levels being the mental plane. When I see the chart of the egoic lotus and centers, I do not see the equivalent for the three higher chakras. Could they be in the whatever? There is no equivalent. Well, the equivalent, in a way, are the knowledge petals, the love petals, and the sacrifice petals, and then the synthesis petals. In other words, the solar angel has provided us with a kind of equivalent because we have not yet organized our mental body fully. After the fourth initiation, when the causal body disappears, then there will be those higher chakras upon the higher mental plane. And 35 of them added together will make a master, and 42 of those vortices of Chohan and 49 of Chohan of the seventh degree. Every level will have its own vortices of force all connected. So for a while, no, there will be no chakras there. And the what goes on within the causal body, provided by the structure of the underlying angel of the presence, will have to substitute for chakra development. And when we develop our different tiers of petals, including the synthesis petals and so forth, and even the jewel and the lotus, opening up to that, we are paving the way for the appearance of our own chakras coming from the monad after the disappearance of the egoic lotus. But you're right, you know, I mean, there are no chakras there yet, okay? The egoic lotus takes the place of them. But anyway, that was not, it ended with the word S, so I don't know where else we are. But anyway, I think I've answered that question.
It said, she said, could it be in the soul?
Well, in a way. I mean, what is the soul? Remember, we have a problem with the word soul. Soul means consciousness. So in a way, wherever there is consciousness, there is soul. Now we disciples deal with a special case of what we call soul, which is consciousness within that structure on the higher mental plane we call the egoic lotus. And we call that the soul. But that's not it. The truer soul is the spiritual triad because it's a more expansive area of vibration in which more can be known. A still truer soul is found in the consciousness of the monad, and on and on and on and on until we reach the absolutely universal soul, which is the consciousness of the universal logos of all parts of its nature. So remember that soul is a very protean, changeable term. Okay, now what our popular view is it's on the higher mental plane, but that breaks, and then a new type of expansive consciousness takes its place in that soul, and then something breaks again, and we enter the soul of the monad, which is the consciousness of the monad. And then that breaks, and then we enter something else on the in the sea of fire on the logoic plane, and on and on and on, until we have the universal soul. Okay, I hope that helps a little. All right, now look, friends, I can't go on too long. The reason being that I have another broadcast coming up in less than an hour. So as I say, that is going to be on YouTube link, the live link that we've given to you and that you should have, and we're using for all right now for all the YouTube programs. So I'm going to, I'm just going to say, let's get on with the meditation. There have been some interesting questions, and like I say, anything goes when you're studying occultism, anything can go. I hope I covered. Okay, and there's Laura Gyurka, and hi, Laura. And I basically somehow thought you were somebody else here, and I was answering you as part of Veronique. But anyway, I did answer that question. And Anne, okay, we're good. All right, friends. I would usually go on further, but I can see the handwriting on the wall, and I have to get a lot of preparation for that next broadcast. So let's have our meditation. And we're dealing with misrepresentation of perception. We're dealing with lying, the glamour which causes people to hide the truth they perceive because they want to achieve something for the personality as they hide the truth from themselves and from others. Now, let's see, where are we? Formulation of the dissipation of glamour. There it is. Okay. All right. So, let me get my pitch pipe here. You know, you kind of, one day the whole discussion about the different notes and the colors they represent and the qualities for healing and expansion of consciousness or even death, what these tones can do. So we want to be as close as we can be using the appropriate tones, and especially the note G. It's been said that the whole sun resonates like a bell to the note G, which is a blue note and is related to the second ray. It's the dominant in music, subdominant, dominant, and tonic. Da-da-dum. Okay,
Michael?
So it's the, yes?
I'm sorry.
Yes, yes.
Your attendees are asking you to please make it bigger.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Sorry.
Okay, I'll just see if I... That's it. That's all I'm going to do. Hope that helps. Because, okay, there you go. Right. All right. Anyway, I'm talking about the dominant in music, which is of the proportion 3 to 2 in terms of its vibration. Interestingly, the two numbers sum to 5, and it's called the fifth itself, and it relates to the second ray into the soul. And DK deals with this in Letters on Occult Meditation. Okay? I think maybe there's another way to do this. I wonder if I can do it this way. There's going to be a little problem, but do what we can do. Calibri. Madonna, and all right, now you should have no trouble. But I'm the one who will have trouble, but not you. All right. So, Maybe I'm going to just make it a little bit. I haven't much time, so this will perhaps be a little bit abbreviated. All right, let's just together go into the silence. We sort of link up with each other from the spiritual aspect, not as personalities so much, but as beings who are expressing on the higher mental plane. Now we use the protective formula. As I said, if we didn't need it, he wouldn't give it. So this is not easy work, and it has certain dangers. So be watchful. And it's the cross of divinity. It involves the two eyes in this case. So we say together, as a soul, I work in light. And darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. You see that cross for each person, radiant, defensive, protective, and see for the whole group that cross as well. Now we bring together the three lights. By now we know what that is. We lift the light of matter from below in the personality up to the mental plane. Through visualization, we focus the light of lower mind with the light of matter. This means we can reason and think logically. And then we bring in to join these two fused lights. We bring in the light of the soul. We'll call it a white light at this point because it's very purifying. We try to find that light through imagination or through some sort of sense of it. And we bring it down imaginatively and merge it with the other three lights, soul light, mental light, and the vital light of matter. It's etheric, principally. A triple light as one now exists. And we affirm that with our mantra, followed by the sacred word. And so we say, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Oh. So this triple light as one is our beginning of our searchlight, which at once is an organ of perception and an organ of dissipation and final destruction. The next thing we have is the formula. And as we're using the formula, saying it together, we visualize that great searchlight out onto the astral plane, or in, however you want to think of it, and being ready then to conduct its work. So that light is now extended, the searchlight is going forth into this the field where the greatest amount of generalized illusion can be found, using illusion in the generic sense. And we watch the beam, we are producing the beam, and it's getting ready for work. Radiance are we, and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light, we work and turn the darkness into day. So there is our beam. We all support it. We all make our contribution to it. It's ready to detect. It's ready to dissipate the distortions. And think about what this glamour of misrepresenting the truth is doing to humanity at this time. We will certainly never reach the goal if we are basing it upon false premises. And so we add to this the power of will, strengthening our being, and we say together, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And we see the strengthening of our beam with the spiritual will, so that it is a very effective instrument in ending the distortions, fogs, miasmas, which prevent the truth, which hide the truth from being known. A strong beam we have all produced. Now, our glamour is the glamour of lying, distorting the truth, misrepresenting the truth. And we are going to utter these words of power together. And as we do that, we're visualizing our beam of light penetrating into the glamour, however we want to visualize that, and producing its weakening and dissipation. So see if you can detect those, you know, darkened areas, even through the imagination, the veils, the mists, the fogs, the distorted areas. And we say together, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of lying. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour of misrepresenting the truth, of lying. Now, these are the words of power. And we can use them as we take the 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose, and we see the work proceeding, weakening this glamour, dissipating the veils, the fogs, clearing the miasmas, and seeing humanity standing in the sunlight of truth. So let us then have that 5 minutes of interior work according to your own method. So we have done our little bit to help bring the Sun of Truth onto the astral plane and especially into the Kama Manasic world, so that the darkness is dissipated and the clarity, in this case using the fifth ray, the clarity takes its place. So we withdraw our beam imaginatively, and the triple light is now upon the mental plane. The beam is withdrawn, and as DK says, the searchlight of the soul is shut off. We hold that mental focus, which all disciples have to achieve, and not be swayed by emotions which we cannot control, but really are the observers and the controllers of the emotional body, increasingly so. So let us sound the Om, acknowledging that we have done a piece of work together, and we continue learning about glamour, learning about Maya, glamour, and illusion, and trying to clear the subtle bodies of our own self and also of humanity as a whole. So we work from the mental, emotional, physical, and imagine some clearing as we sound the three Oms. Friends, for working together, and we'll keep doing that every week. As I said, next week we may have a little trouble because anyway, I think we could only get a train on a certain date, and that was that. So let's see what we can do. I'll work with Joe and BL and Michael, and we'll get some message out to you about what will be going on. Meanwhile, again, as I say, in just 25 minutes, we have a broadcast off of YouTube for the Shambhala Names of Mary. Remember, Mary, in this case, is the symbol of the purified planet Earth. Earth, as a true disciple and an initiate of some degree, gradually growing into its duty. So maybe we'll see some of you there, and the link should be in the chat box, and probably you have the link anyway. So thank you for joining us, and we will continue tomorrow with the Soul of Nations meditation, part of the Ask program, which will be at 5 o'clock p.m. I think that's correct. then on Sunday, attracting money, resources for the work of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ. Okay. We'll be getting this up as soon as we can, either on Makara or on YouTube. We're still a little bit behind because of the change, but these programs will be available to you increasingly. So all the best, and thank you, everybody. Lots of love, many blessings. And Tuya will be giving that. Well, it'll actually be a video, but we'll be giving that meditation in just less than 23 minutes. Talk to you soon, and bye-bye. All the best. Bye-bye.